Welcome to Still Scared, a podcast about creepy, spooky, and disturbing children's books, films, and TV. I'm Ren Wednesday, my co-host is Adam Wybray, and today we're talking about the film Night Books from 2021. A full transcript of this episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Good afternoon, Adam.
Afternoon, Ren.
Hi. Hello. Yeah.
Hello.
just wanted to tell our listeners that you're wearing a very nice shirt today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's like a child's playmat. Yeah, Antonia bought it for me about a year ago, and it's a very lime green shirt with like kind of car track on it and cars. I don't know how to drive, so I can't say if the cars look like they're not doing a great job at driving, because some of them are on the track and some of them are off and some of them are facing different directions. I know enough about the road to say that this is probably a recipe for disaster, but it looks a bit like one of those mats I had one as a kid, where you sit on with like toy cars and stuff and has all
you drive them around. Yeah.
Yeah, municipal buildings.
So today we're talking about Night Books, which is a film that was released last September on Netflix, and not advocating for Netflix. I think probably most people know at this point why Netflix are terrible, but maybe you can find it on DVD in your local charity shop or something. I don't know.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
They're 10 a penny now, seriously. Like the charity shop, I think it was Cat Rescue or something. Like, it was like DVDs, and it was like 10 for a pound.
Yeah, yeah, they're really... the value is absolutely plummeting, so... I don't know if they're even making them anymore.
I think like only like Criterion and like these sort of special editions for people who still want DVDs.
Yeah. I still watch DVDs, but then I'm 33, so,
Yeah, yeah. I'm 35 now.
Oh, yeah.
But birthday the other day.
Oh, birthday.
I know, God, but 35, that doesn't feel right. That's not on. I think it's the way that, like, during the pandemic, like, those 2 years felt interminable and really stretched out and purgatorial, and now they feel really compressed in retrospect.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the worst of both worlds. So at the time, it felt like it lasted ages, whereas now it's like, oh, frickin' heck, those 2 years went by. So I still feel like I should be 32 going on 33. Like, being 35 doesn't feel right, but I'm sure I'll get used to it soon enough.
Yeah. Don't really know. Just sort of chose this as a kind of recent children's horror film that it exists. Sometimes we like to talk about recent things.
We don't always. I know there's a lot of millennial nostalgia in this, which I think, you know, might make up part of the discussion here, because Night Books is not without its millennial nostalgia.
Yes.
I feel this is made by people who are very aware that there are millennial parents who want to show their young children the kind of things they liked when they were young.
Yeah.
So it's definitely got a cross-generational discourse going on this film. it's pretty bang up to date, and I think we both thought it was... It's pretty okay. It's a decent enough film.
It's not bad. damn it, with faint praise. It stars Winslow Fegley as Alex, who's the main kid, Lydia Duett as Yasmin, who's the other kid, and Kristen Ritter as Natasha, who's the witch. And Kristen Ritter, known for Jessica Jones, which I never watched.
She's annoying.
Tell me about it.
Okay, so it's set at Halloween, I think. That's a good start.
No, oh, is it Halloween? Or is it just that it's Alex's birthday and his birthday is Halloween themed? Or is it that he happens to have been born on Halloween?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those. It's one of those options.
Yeah, it's in the autumnal months
And it's a spooky, creepy themed party.
Yeah.
We see this kid Alex, and he's upset about something, and he overhears his parents discussing him, and they say, "Oh, I don't know, maybe it would be easier if he was more, I don't know, normal." And he's a bit sad about that. His room is covered with horror paraphernalia, and he packs a rucksack and leaves the apartment, and he's running away from home. He gets in a lift, and the lift opens on a sort of dark, kind of flickery, fluorescent lit floor, the open door of a red lit apartment, and it's playing The Lost Boys on an old TV, and that's his favorite film. So he kind of approaches it, and he seems to be in a sort of trance, and there's a plate of pie, I think, and he eats a bit of the
Pumpkin pie,
pie, pumpkin pie, and then he collapses. And he wakes up in this old-fashioned room. He doesn't know where he is. He tries to jump out of a window, but it just propels him back into the room. And he's like, "Oh no." Then this witch appears to him and explains that this apartment lures children in, but she only keeps them if they're useful to her. She says, "Are you useful to me?" And he says, "I write scary stories." And she says, "Right, okay, you have to write me a new story every night and read it to me, and otherwise I will kill you." And that's the premise of this film.
Editor's note: also the premise of 1001 Nights.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of setup, but it's pretty brisk. Like, we're in the midst of things quite quickly. Yeah, the editing's quite, I don't know, choppy at first. Lurching forwards at slightly choppy intervals. Maybe that's just maybe that was just me. It settled down. That was only at the start. I feel like the film took a little while to kind of get into its groove. Like,
Yes.
I enjoyed the second half quite significantly more than the first half.
Yeah, me too. I was also a little disappointed that the child luring apartment didn't get more the personality. I don't know. I'd have kind of liked to have seen it a montage of it luring more children or something.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Like.
That's an interesting point, actually, because I suppose in quite a lot of kids' horror, like if we think of Monster House, which we covered, a few years back, there's obviously a big emphasis on the house as dangerous and ensnaring children. And the set designs are really lush here, especially in the second half. There's a kind of Hansel and Gretel style witch's candy cottage later, which is really good. I do think, I mean, the apartment has really nice wallpapering.
I really like the
It's
wallpaper,
really nice wall. It's not quite Overlook Hotel creepy wallpapering because it's quite nice. At first, I thought there's a term on the evolution of horror that was used when they reviewed Midsommar that I think the guest described Midsommar as Instagram horror.
Oh,
to describe, just, yeah, and I think there's an aspect of that to Night Books. That it does all look quite Instagrammable.
Yeah, well, Natasha the Witch is very stylish.
Kristen Ritter gets to wear some incredible costumes.
She has this amazing raincoat at one point.
My God, the raincoat is glorious.
It's like translucent pink, and then it has these geometric shoulders that's sort of standing out. It's so good. I love it.
I'm glad you mentioned the raincoat. The raincoat was a definite highlight.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like it's got kind of spiky shoulder pads. Like, if you imagine what an anime villain in Sailor Moon would wear if they wore a raincoat.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely like something you'd see on Drag Race as well.
Yeah, no, that occurred to me too. And I think I really liked Ritter's performance. Like, she is giving this quite campy performance, I'd say. Like, she's not exactly chewing the scenery, but, you know, she's doing a lot of sort of... I guess she's, basically throwing a lot of shade. Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I wasn't really sold on her performance.
Oh, okay. How so?
I didn't really think she had the menace to sell the menace to sell the premise. The menace to sell the premise. She's kind of impatient and sort of snappish and petulant, but I didn't really feel like she had the sort of depths of sadism that we're meant to believe when we see her cabinet of children turned into little child figurines.
That's a good point. I mean, I guess if you compare her to, like, the wicked stepmother witch in Burton's Hansel and Gretel, for instance, because there's, you know, parts of this are very obviously, I mean, explicitly modelled on Hansel and Gretel. You know, there's no bones about it. That witch is wholly evil. But, I mean, we learn more, obviously, about Natasha's backstory, which maybe explains that.
Yes. I think we're just going all over the place in terms of plot, but that's fine. But
Okay, so yeah, spoiler alert.
Sorry. spoiler. Yeah, we find out that she is one of the children who the house swallowed, who has in the end. And I think that probably does make sense. In her character is quite childish, sort of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, okay, so it definitely... And it's not an unscary film, because there are some other monster designs that are pretty gruesome and ghoulish. And, you know, there are some jump scares. Like, there is genuine peril. We know that children have died and that is a possibility here. So I think it's not without scary moments. And certainly, you know, if you're a kid watching it, I think it would be pretty scary. It possibly suffers from... I've written this as a post-ironic lack of seriousness. And I think this is linked to... So I also write reviews of Legendary Pink Dots albums for KiddySneezes.com. And there's a podcast associated with KiddySneezes called Write Good, which Raquel S. Benedict hosts. And they had an episode a few months back that actually got a lot of internet traction, where Raquel kind of identified this trend she called, I don't think she came up with the term, squeecore. And it was a kind of critique of a lot of modern sci-fi writing, basically. I've written down some of the traits of squeecore. One of the main ones is snarkiness. So this was described as being kind of like early 2000s blogger humour, but it's basically banter in place of actual jokes. So people saying snarky things rather than actually these being proper jokes or really funny. Like, this is sometimes seen as something that comes out of Joss Whedon's
writing. I was about to say, yeah. It's related to the whole Whedonization of it.
definitely. Also, lampshading one's own deconstructions. So doing this kind of semi-serious, like, drawing attention to the things you're referencing, but also, like, you know, I know that you know that I know. This is kind of lazy, but hey, I know it's lazy, so it's okay, kind of thing. And this sort of, like, semi-serious, like, okay, you're not meant to take this wholly seriously. So yeah, it is a bit scary, but it's also playing at being scary and has all the signifiers of scary in inverted quote marks films. So it's like, it's not wholly committing to, like, it's not wholly committing to being scary. It's not wholly committing to being funny. So it's sort of hedging its bets somewhere between the two.
Yeah, I noticed that at the end, they find the original witch. Natasha isn't the original witch of this apartment. She's harvesting magic from the original witch, who actually ate children. She was a hardcore child-eating witch. But,
those witches, they're not like the witches in the old days. These snowflake witches.
I know. So she's keeping... she's keeping this original witch sedated with the stories. This is where the stories come in, that she has to be told horrible stories to keep her asleep. But they wake this original witch, and she's sort of chasing after the kids, but they're escaping the lift, and this the kind of witch appears from the top of the lift and sort of vomits kind of candy silly string all over the kids. It's quite scary.
It kind of looks like Gunge as well.
Yeah, Gunge.
It's not quite
good old Gunge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, get your own back style Gunge.
and then Alex says something like, "This is the worst lift ever," or something. And it's like,
yeah, and like, that's not a joke, right?
Yeah.
Like that, but it's banter.
Yeah, I kind of very much, I don't know, I sort of felt like it was, they were kind of like, oh, maybe this is getting a bit scary for kids at this point, let's put a little
was a little sort of
semi joke in it there.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think, and that I don't know, I do get it, because like we were discussing last time with Watership Down, I mean, Watership Down obviously wasn't necessarily intended for children. And, you know, we were in the kind of, me and Catherine were in that funny situation of basically saying, which doesn't often happen, especially with horror fans, oh, the BBFC should have been more harsh. You know, what were the BBFC doing giving this a U? You know.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a bit perverse to just take the position, right? No, children's horror should always just be really scary.
It should be as scary as possible, yeah.
Yeah, I was traumatised as a kid. They should be too, you know, like...
Yeah.
So I get why, you know, as a screenwriter, you do that, right? Mm. And sort of undercut these things with jokes. But it's not always... I think it's like... It does mean the tone... It's quite wobbly.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah. And I do think that, especially combined with the kind of pacing issues early on that I mentioned, which I think do sort themselves out in the second half. But it does mean that, I don't know, it took me a while to kind of get into the film. And I don't think that was just me. I do think the film... It feels like it doesn't quite know what it's doing at first, somehow.
Yeah, I think... Because it sets things up so quickly, and then we're right into it, and I think then it does get a bit wobbly, and it kind of turns into a sort of Alien for Kids bit for a while.
Oh, yeah, I guess it kind of does.
Where they... the other kid... is called Yasmin, and she's kept around by Natasha to cook and clean and sort of make tend to the greenhouse and such. I thought she was very good, Lydia Duet. I thought she was a very good young actor, and she did quite a lot to sort of sell the kind of emotional bits of the story. And
really good point. She's having to do pretty much all of the emotional lifting.
Yeah.
Actually. Alex's character, He's meant to be like a little R.L. Stein, I guess. yeah. You know, like he's a sort of little tortured artist. You know, he only cares about the stories, darn it.
Well, but he's decided he doesn't do that anymore. Like,
that's true. Though, let's be honest, it doesn't take him long to get back into no. it. Like, we very quickly get a montage of him and his process pacing around writing and talking to himself. So,
yeah. You know. Yeah, he's a little R.L. Stein, a little Stephen King.
But yeah, I think Lydia Jewett does have to do a lot more than... I mean, Winslow Fegley is good, but I think she's asked to do a lot more of her performance.
Yeah. yeah, and I think she really rises to it. Oh my gosh, what were we talking about? Oh yeah, the alien bit. Yeah, that they so they have this potion green. They have this greenhouse for making the Natasha's potions, and there's these creatures called shredders that come out of sort of pods. It's very alien. There's a spider like knife legs, and they go for the face. And
I thought for sure it was gonna. Ah! Ah!
Yeah, there's sort of a whole middle portion of the film of them trying not to disturb these things and then disturbing these things and then being chased by them, and then one of them creeps into Alex's backpack and then it destroys his notebook of stories, which is a plot point because he's been struggling to write any more new stories, so he's just been reading out his old stories to Natasha.
And the set design here looks great. So they've got like ultraviolet paint on these, well, synthetic plants. Obviously, they're meant to be real plants. Really simple idea, but I've not seen it done before, actually. Maybe a little bit like the garden Coraline, perhaps. But in terms of in a live action film, I'd, you know, simple idea, really, like ultraviolet paint on synthetic plants. But yeah, it looks really great. And is a memorable image from the film. So I do think the set design here is really strong in places. Like, I agree that the apartment perhaps is a bit too nice, almost. but this garden and then later the kind of candy house, I think both of those look pretty special, actually. So, I did enjoy some of the aesthetics of the film.
Actually, I have a very good texture of the week from this film.
I don't think I've got anything to actually make sounds with. You know, I'm on
campus.
That's okay. Here. I mean, Oh, that's not texture. That's nice.
It's a nautilus shell. I'm tapping a paintbrush on a nautilus shell.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I like something from a Brian Eno album.
Yeah. I have one of these things where I just like got a standout texture and I saw it and I was like, right, that's my texture of the week.
Okay.
So they're trying to escape the apartment. They find notes written in some of the books in the library, and written in the back of the notes, back of the books, these kind of notes about how one of the kids who was kept there is going to escape, and they call her Unicorn Girl. And they're sort of leafing through the books, trying to find more of her notes. And, they find a bit where she talks about how she's going to make a potion, like a sleeping potion, to put the witch to sleep, and she just needs to find the last ingredient that will mask the smell of this potion. And so they come up with this whole plan that how they're going to trick Natasha into telling them what this ingredient is, and because she's always correcting Alex when he's reading out his stories, and she's like, well, everyone knows that that's not how that works. So he tells a story and deliberately gets this ingredient wrong so that she'll go, oh, everyone knows it's actually cinnaroot that you need
to use. I guess it's another kind of childlike trait.
Yeah. Yeah, she can't help her one-upping and showing off that what she knows.
Their skin is deathly white. Some of their clothes date back decades. They push hard on a swing higher and higher.
Stupid! Everyone knows ghosts don't have actual physical hands, so they could never push him on a swing. Amateur.
But, so they do this. They get this potion. They manage to get her to sleep. And they escape out this back door that they've seen her coming in. And they're out into this forest. And they're like, wow, we've actually escaped. It's amazing. And then they start to realize that it actually is looking something not quite right about the forest. And Yasmin goes to a tree and peels off the bark to reveal the wallpaper from the apartment underneath the bark of the tree. And like, it's like, oh, that's a good texture.
Yeah, that was a good texture. Okay, so mine is from just a little bit after that. So basically, you've already mentioned that the original witch is revived, and because she's been sort of left for presumably a couple of decades, yeah, in the candy house, she's got crusted candy growing out of her head.
Yeah,
she's all Cronenberg with candy.
Yeah.
Cronenberg with candy witch.
Yeah. I know.
And then when she's defeated, right, that means you get this wonderful montage of like boiling sugar.
Yeah, they shove her into the oven in traditional, you know, Hansel and Gretel style, and but then there's all the bubbling, boiling sugar on her her candy skin. It's it's pretty grisly.
I really liked that. That was really pleasing.
Yeah, and also when she's been sort of kept asleep in this kind of bathtub, and when she wakes up and she's stepping out of it, there's all these kind of bone cracking and crunching sound effects. They really go to town on that.
I really loved that kind of stuff, and it's just a shame that it comes very late in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last half an hour, I was really, really taken with.
We talked about a rendition of the Hansel and Gretel cottage quite recently with Burton's Hansel and Gretel, which was particularly sort of gushing and gushing and gungy.
And gloopy and melty.
Yeah, this one is this one's very gelatinous. They're sort of entranced in the wood that's still the apartment. They're sort of drawn towards the candy cottage, and it's Yasmin has this big round kind of aquamarine jelly that's filled with cream or something. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think David Yurovesky, did you see Brightburn?
The what? Sorry?
The film Brightburn.
No.
I didn't either, but I do know it was like a sort of evil Superman inversion story. So it's like the Superman origin story, but the kid's evil rather than good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's an adult horror film, but obviously focusing on this, a bit like The Omen, but instead of Damien, you've got Superman, basically.
Mm.
So this is, you know, a director who's made two films for adults previously, doing a kids' film, which is perhaps why it does have these genuinely scary moments, a bit like say, with Nicholas Rogue doing The Witches, right? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is clearly a kid's film, but feels quite odd and adult and genuinely very scary in places.
Yeah.
And obviously the kind of film citations are largely for films that would have been given, say, R certificates, or at least 15 certificates over here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, in terms of the plot, I don't think the film's actually very indebted to Lost Boys. But as you said, Lost Boys is the film that's used to kind of lure Alex into the apartment. And we see a poster for the Lost Boys in his room.
Yeah.
And then we also have a cover of Cry Little Sister, which is kind of iconically used in Lost Boys, twice on the soundtrack here.
Mm.
Editor's note, by Giverges, no less.
I need you now.
Have you seen Lost Boys?
I haven't.
Antonio got me to watch it just like in the first lockdown, and I thought it was incredible. We could cover it. I think there's an argument to be made that it's a children's horror in the same way that Gremlins is.
Mm.
In as much as it was a film that didn't have an all-ages certificate, but clearly did appeal. A lot of kids watched when it came out. And I remember Lost Boys coming out, and I remember Stuart, my best friend in primary, being really keen on it. His parents were both goths, so they probably showed it to him. And, you know, he'd talk about Lost Boys. And, you know, I remember thinking, oh, sounds too rich for my blood. Or very scary. But, yeah, Lost Boys is a really interesting film because, yeah, it's definitely one of those 80s films where you're not quite sure who the target market is, frankly.
The vampire film that I watched during the first lockdown was Interview with a Vampire, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
I've never seen that.
It's great. It's really good. I don't think you could really claim it was a children's horror, except that it does have
Natalie Portman.
No, but close.
Winona Ryder.
No, but similar sort of elfin features, blonde.
Christina Ricci.
No, you're really close.
Tom Cruise. Yeah. Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst. Yes.
There we go.
Young Kirsten Dunst as a child vampire who keeps eating her piano teachers. And it's I don't know. It's an enjoyable film.
Alex also has a poster for my favourite ever film, Brain Dead, on his wall.
Oh, really? I didn't catch that.
Yeah, well, it's the American, it's Dead Alive, which is the American release name.
My goodness, that's quite strong for a strong stuff for an 11-year-old.
Yeah, like, I might show an 11-year-old, like, the zombie baby in the park scene, but probably not all of it, to be honest. Yeah.
it's great. I love it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's glorious. But probably not really a kid's horror.
And then the style that it changes to when Alex tells his stories is a sort of, vaguely kind of German expressionist, kind of black and white and red, sort of cardboard cut out sets, kind of white face paint sort of deal.
A bit kind of scritchy, early Tim Burton-ish.
Yeah.
It reminded me a little bit, and this is a bit of a deep cut, I think, for listeners, apologies. Reminded me a bit of Obayashi's style. So he's the guy who directed Houseu. Or House.
Oh, yeah.
So. Remind me a bit in the way that it's all very deliberately fake looking and kind of a bit awkward and stilted and very stylized sets. But yeah, I thought they were pretty cool.
I liked the interludes of cutting to his stories. That was quite fun. They all had a sort of title card and a little kind of Treehouse of Horror sting to them when it came up.
I mean, that's the thing. There are lots of likeable parts to the film and good ideas. I think my reservations are largely about tone. That it just doesn't quite seem to cohere the way that it kind of moves from genuinely scary to silly, slightly gross out humour.
Yeah.
There's a horrid joke involving an invisible cat.
It's so disgusting. We didn't need that.
I did not enjoy it.
It's like I'm watching this, and I was like, oh, poor Adam. He's going to hate this.
I really hate it. I really did hate that moment.
Yeah.
Vile. it was really horrible. I think it doesn't quite cohere somehow. Like, it doesn't quite work together as a film. But the individual parts are good, and there are some really striking visuals. So, you know, I think, and I can see that they're clearly going for a kind of intergenerational. Like, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of parents who watch Stranger Things with their kids, right? Which isn't exactly children's horror, but I can imagine that happens quite a lot. And I just feel like this is very clearly going for a kind of millennial parent and Zoomer kid audience. But very much to films from the kind of 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And maybe there's something about intergenerational trauma at a stretch.
Yes, I mean, I did have that. So no, I'm not really sure where we're meant to land on Natasha. I don't know if the film really knows. Like, we learn that she was one of the children kidnapped by the apartment and the original witch. And there's a sort of quite harrowing detail that this witch ate her companions and Natasha had to clean out the oven.
I wrote that down too. That's genuinely...
Yeah, that's pretty upsetting. And then she does manage to escape because it turns out that she is the unicorn girl who was writing these instructions. About how she was going to escape, and she does manage to, but it's been so long that her parents have moved house and she can't find them, and so she just goes back to the apartment and becomes the witch herself. There is the kind of suggestion of a kind of cycle of abuse narrative there, but she doesn't. Shouldn't really have any redemption from...
No, not really.
she just carries on being the witch.
I don't know if it was meant to be like, you know, hey, kids, you know, the millennials may seem bad, but, you know, it's the older generation who are really to blame.
those boomer witches who...
The boomer witches who ate children.
Yeah.
You know, us millennial witches just, you know, you know, it would harm our children through and not being self-actualized enough.
Yeah. Yeah, we just well, we can't help our arrested development.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was going for.
Because yeah, we you know, the Alex and Yasmin do end up escaping, and they push the original witch into the oven, and her candy skin bubbles and boils, and luckily the apartment, because the apartment is meant to move all over the world, I don't know.
But, it's thinly sketched there. It's like, oh yeah, they're moved different places.
it goes places, but it hasn't moved since Alex has been in there. So he's still, or at least it's returned to the same apartment, and Alex is reunited with his parents, and Yasmin is reunited with hers, and they take the cat with them, as who's kind of started as an antagonist and become an ally along the way. And
Siamese cat?
Yeah.
Or Sphinx?
A hairless cat.
A hairless cat.
Yeah. And that's all fine, but because all of Alex's stories had to have they couldn't have a happy ending, is that the witch had to be kept asleep with unhappy stories. So the film has an unhappy ending, which is Natasha still being in her apartment with her knick-knack cabinet full of children.
But I mean, it feels like a bit of another pastry's gone as well, which definitely shouldn't have been watching. It is Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
And very much like the ending of Nightmare on Elm Street, where it's like, it seems like a happy ending. No, but Freddy Krueger's actually the evil car now. Have you seen Nightmare? Because that is literally the twist.
Okay, yeah.
But that's fine, you know. Yeah, she's still, and I guess it opens it for a sequel if they want to do one.
I definitely enjoyed the last half hour of it. I thought that was good. Good kids horror. I like the premise. I wish the premise had been done a bit more with the idea of the monster apartment.
Yeah, a bit more fleshed out.
Yeah. It definitely was definitely got a bit woobly around the middle. In terms of pacing.
And, pacing and tone.
Pacing and tone.
And gross out humour.
Yeah, that we really didn't need. yeah. And again, I thought Lydia Duet particularly did a very good job. She actually had quite a... we get to hear Yasmin's story of how she got lured into the apartment. She's kind of like nicely specific story. It was like kind of the smell of Doro Watts, which is an Ethiopian chicken stew, which she used to make with her late grandma, which was quite affecting. And also, you know, crunchy specificity, as Tim Clare says. Sorry, this is a completely tangent. Do you had Ethiopian food?
I don't know if I have actually.
Yeah.
Would you presumably you have?
Yeah. No. I would highly recommend it if you get the chance. There's a place I've been to a couple of times in Manchester, and there's lots of vegetarian and vegan options, and you get it on there. Sort of dish kind of has this injera, which is this sort of spongy flatbread, and then you get the different dishes of kind of curries and stews on top of this flatbread, and then you get more of it and you dip it in, and it's delicious. I mean, that might lure me in to the monster apartment. Really good Ethiopian food, so.
Oh, well, bear that in mind, thank you.
Yeah. and I think that's all
I think that's all.
I think that's all.
You know, not every kid's horror is watership down.
Yeah. but good to see a recent offering in the genre, and
hopefully there'll be more children's horror films come out soon. Hopefully not just on Netflix.
Yeah.
Do you want to do the credits?
Yeah. So, thank you for listening. If you want, you can review us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Got a review recently that said, "This podcast is all right." Thank you.
like Nightbooks.
Sorry?
Like Nightbooks. We're the Nightbooks of podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. All right, yeah. I'll take that. you can email us at stillscaredpodcast@gmail.com. Neither of us want to be on Twitter very much. We're going to try and come up with a solution to probably still having the Twitter account going, but maybe porting posts from Instagram, but keep you updated on that. Our artwork is by Letty Wilson, who, and I just got a new book by Letty through my door today, which is the book of the kind of first part of their epic fairies doing crimes webcomic Owl People, and it looks absolutely gorgeous. So I do recommend checking that out. Our intro music is by Maki Yamazaki. Outro music is by Joe Kelly. Do you have a sign off for us?
But don't get Cronenberged with candy, creepy kids.
Yeah, no, it's unpleasant. just try and avoid that if you can, you know.
Bye.
All right, see you next time. Bye.